So, what did you, was the threat just a thing, or was that not really a thing?
What thing?
When you said there was a threat.
Oh, I said something about my mic bleeding, and so I was like, oh,
Oh.
speaking of threats.
Oh, that's what you're referring to
Yeah,
that
it's just a weird
specifically.
non sequitur. Welcome to another episode of Jabber and the Drone, the movie review podcast that politely disagrees to agree. Back with me again is my regular co-host, Richard Wally.
And with my co-host, Cassidy Robinson. How's it going?
Good. I got my diploma finally.
Well, that's good.
I never got my diploma.
I still don't have my BA.
You don't? You just don't have it? Like,
no.
You actually didn't graduate?
My mom got it, and then she moved and doesn't know where it is.
That's kind of, yeah, I don't know where my diploma for my undergrad is either. I think I lost it in the move, but so I'd have to order another one, and that costs money, and I don't want to spend. But this
Yeah.
one I just never actually got, so I was half worried that I didn't actually graduate.
Oh,
so I was afraid to actually call and find out what the deal was.
Well, you missed it by one credit.
Right, yeah, that's what I was afraid of. It'd be some bullshit like that. Like, it's like, oh, you didn't do this one thing with your thesis, and you technically aren't graduated till you do. Like, I thought it was because there were so many stupid little things at the end like that.
Right.
Like,
well, that's what happened to me with mine. My BA was,
yeah,
I literally was, they're like, well, you meet every single requirement except you need one more credit. Just anything. Just one more. No, I'd have one more psychology credit. Just one.
Right.
I was like, okay.
What did you do?
Oh, I just, the lab that I was in, I just did a summer semester of it.
Oh, yeah. I think I remember you doing that now. Yeah, you pretty much just did like a, you were like an aide or something, right?
Yeah, I basically, what I did was I made copies and did all a bunch of little silly work for the professor that I'd worked under.
Yeah.
It wasn't a big deal. It was more just like, really?
Anything new?
Oh, just the same old, you know, Memorial Day weekend. We had pseudo barbecues. It was kind of gray one of the days, so it wasn't really a barbecue, but we had some pulled pork on two occasions with two different groups.
Okay. But so pseudo because it wasn't outside?
One was not outside. It was inside, but we watched, we had a double feature. We watched National Lampoon's Vacation and The Great Outdoors, I think it is, with John Candy.
Yeah.
It's they're both.
And
80s
Dan Aykroyd,
vacation
right?
Movies. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's a fun pairing.
All the food was very good. Little bonfire, so.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's fun. I'm glad you've been able to enjoy the beginning of summer. The official beginning of summer. Isn't that what they say? It's after Labor Day, it's officially summer?
They might. I don't know who this they you refer to is.
The calendar makers?
The calendar men?
Yeah.
That come around enforcing the calendar ways?
The calendar Illuminati?
Yes. The calendar Illuminati. We have it.
We were supposed to record last night, but I told you earlier I went to a concert and I came home much later than I thought I would because I forgot. It had been so long since I've been to a concert that I forgot that they never start on time.
No, they're too cool for that.
Yeah, they never start on time. And then there's long breaks between bands. Speaking of being a long time since I've done it, since I've gone to a...
I'm sorry. Go on.
It's not going to be one of those.
I didn't say it.
Not going to be one of those kind of stories. No, speaking of a long time since I've been to a concert, I tweeted after I came back from the show. I went and saw a hardcore punk band called Headwound City. They're sort of like a supergroup. I think I told you this online already, but Mm-hmm. It contains members of the Blood Brothers, the Ya-Ya-Yas, and the Locust. And it sounds a little bit like what you think that combination would sound like. Which is to say very loud and screamy.
I listened to one of their songs online.
Yeah.
It wasn't the Locust for sure.
No, a lot more composed and a lot less absurdist and a lot less Devo than the Locust.
It wasn't the Ya-Ya-Yas quite either.
No, it wasn't like...
You're right. It was... I don't know the Blood Brothers, so I can't say if it's a perfect union or not, but...
Right. If any of those three bands, if anybody who's listening knows any of those three bands, probably sounds the most like them because he's the lead singer. It was the Blood Brothers guy.
Okay.
But it's a little more, I don't know, post-hardcore, whatever. Anyway, so I went to this show, and like I told you online, I had no idea what kind of crowd was going to be there. I've never been to this club before. I thought it was like lower Hollywood, but it was actually more like closer to downtown LA. So it was a lot less, I guess, glitzy than I thought it was going to be. It was a little bit more of kind of a dive, but in a good way. And I show up a half hour early thinking like, oh man, this is way too late. They're going to be behind this huge line. And then of course I'm the first one there because being early at all is supremely uncool.
Let's see, it surprises me. Usually you're late.
Well, not to stuff like that. I'm the guy who, like, if I know there's going to be a line somewhere, I'm like, let's get there 45 minutes early. Especially in LA, because it takes at least half an hour to find parking.
Well, that's, I can see
to find free parking anyway. So, yeah, so I'm there waiting, and I was like, oh man, am I going to be like the only person? Because that would be kind of embarrassing and weird. And then, of course, a crowd starts to accumulate behind me. And then when, all of the people there who were the bouncers, I guess you will, are the people who work at this club. They're like these really tall black guys in really sharp suits telling me like, oh yeah, because at one point I was like, I did street parking, but I'm not sure if it's like, if I should be like parked down that far or if I should be walking around late at night. And they're like, you're fine. I'm like, okay. And then at one point, you know, they go through the whole rigmarole of, like, getting everybody into the club. And it had been so long that I forgot, like, oh, yeah, they have to pat you down and all that crap. And so I just start to go walking. It's like, hold on. I have to pat you down. So I go into, like, I don't know, TSA mode. And I, like, put my hands over my head and spread my legs. And the guy was all like, no, we're friends, buddy. You don't have to do that. Like, okay. So, yeah, I tweeted after the show, I've never felt more 30 years old than I do right now. But it was a fun show.
It's been a while for me, too, so that's interesting. It's funny to hear. Were you the oldest person there?
No. It was a really interesting mix. Like, there was a lot of young people because the opening acts were pretty young.
Sure.
Totally different kind of music, too. Like, you know. Headwind City's a hardcore band, and the opening acts was like this synthy, like dark wave, industrial punk, which is like really weirdly popular in LA with like the Hispanic community. Like this gothy stuff is still like super huge to them. Like you would think it's still 1986. And so there was a lot of like goth chicks there because of these bands.
Awesome.
And then, like, and then a lot of just, like, dudes. Like, pretty normal, I wouldn't even say necessarily punky, not necessarily, like, college-y dudes.
Like bros?
Not bros, but dudes.
So that, between a regular man and a bro, a dude.
Yeah, just kind of, like, there were some people, like, who had, like, tats and leather jackets and stuff. But for the most part, it was just kind of, like, hoodies and jeans.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So, but it was a good show. I had fun. I had a headache afterward. Let's get into the movie news.
We do that movie review podcast thing.
This is a movie podcast. And today we're going to be discussing The Nice Guys and X-Men Apocalypse. We're catching up from last week, except for I forgot to do the Netflix homework. So, my bad. If somebody wants to tweet us a punishment.
Stand in the public square and be punished, child.
At Jabber Podcast, tweet what my punishment should be, and as long as it's not getting wet or eating something weird.
You just take all the fun out of it. That's the only, like, You should have to get wet and eat something weird now.
All right, first bit of movie news. This is one of mine. Michael Keaton has signed on for Spider-Man Homecoming. This is Marvel's Spider-Man Homecoming, now that they have the Spider-Man property back. I guess there's some involvement with Sony still, like they're there to kind of, I don't know.
They're like halfway. Technically, it's, well, okay, so Marvel Studios before they were the Disney conglomerate, they actually did most of their movies through different studios.
Right.
So from what I understand, it's no different than then. Because, I mean, Universal had Hulk, Paramount had Captain America. I think Paramount also had Iron Man. Mm. But it's just that Kevin Feige and some of his fellows are coming in and filling out the creative side of things.
Right. So, Michael Keaton has signed on to be in the movie, but nobody knows exactly to what capacity he's going to be in the movie and who he will be playing. There's been some talk that he could be playing a villain, and some people think that it could be, or maybe they're just assuming this because he was in Birdman, they think it'd be funny, but that they could play the Vulture. And I think largely because it's a villain we haven't seen before, and I think it'd be unlikely if they were to launch their new Spider-Man world with Green Goblin or Dr. Octopus or a villain we've seen. But not necessarily.
Not necessarily. I actually don't think it would be a bad choice. And especially, I think it would be funny if they made him the Vulture of all things.
Yeah.
I could see Michael Keaton. Michael Keaton would make a great villain.
Mm-hmm. He has before.
He has before. And he's been a serial killer and things like that. But also, beyond that, I mean, I like it when he plays the darker characters in general. Mm-hmm. And he gets weird and character-y. Not too character-y. I'm not saying I want him full Beetlejuice or anything, but
I love Beetlejuice, but that's, you know, you don't break the glass for Beetlejuice very often.
Yeah, you need that for Beetlejuice, and that's about it.
Yeah,
if you come out and you're doing I don't know, some drama in that voice and in that wig, it would be quite, I don't know, maybe it would be good. I would watch that. Godfather with Beetlejuice,
right? I was thinking one of those, like, edgeless Christian melodramas, like just in the middle of it, like one of the people conjures Beetlejuice into the story. That would immediately make it a better movie.
You're talking about those ones where they just have these really generic, like almost like Dawson's Creek, but religious.
Right.
Right. Right.
Anyway.
That would be good. I was thinking more Lifetime original with Beetlejuice.
Fair enough. Same difference. Yeah. Anyway, do you have an opinion about that? I mean, we like Michael Keaton.
We do. Thank you. Thank you for speaking for me. No, we do, of course.
And Pacific Heights, he was a bad guy and a pretty convincing one at that.
I can't remember. It's not the best film, but I enjoyed it then. There was a one where he's a serial killer. I don't remember I just remember him diving down a elevator shaft. Mid-90s, something rather throwaway film.
Yeah, wasn't that Pacific Heights? The one where he, with him and Melanie Griffith, and they moved into the apartment. He's like their weird neighbor who's like always up their ass about stuff. And then finally it was like during that time of like, I don't know, like the post Fatal Attraction thing where.
Because in this one he was in prison.
Oh.
So unless they moved into a prison.
No, I know which one you're talking about. The one with Andy Garcia.
Yes.
That played opposite him. I forgot what it was called.
Yeah, it was one of those throwaway.
Like thriller things, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, Spider-Man Homecoming. I'm excited to see whatever comes out of this because I think they're in a good place to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that he's in a good place to be a part of something like this. And with their direction and his confidence as an actor, I don't see it being a bad thing, whatever he ends up doing.
And Tom Holland looked good, even though I wasn't sure he should have been in the film, he did well. And also, we've talked beyond that. I've talked about a little bit on the show how the guy that did. There's a motorcycle gang in my house. The guy that did Cop Car, that's directing it. Cop Car, if that's an indicator of what direction they kind of want to go in, it's a pretty. I see what they're doing, and it's very interesting to me that if they go that route. So
right, what's your first story?
My first story is about Jamie Foxx. He's going to be in a rated R Muppets It's called Happy Time Murders. So it is by the Jim Henson Company, actually. But what they're doing, this is a R-rated feature blend of live action and Muppet characters.
Mm-hmm.
And basically it sounds like it's like a murder mystery. So here, let's read the description a little bit. So the Happy Time Gang, there's a TV series with these Muppet characters called the Happy Time Gang. Behind the scenes, these stars lead horrifying lives that don't exactly match their family friendly on camera personas.
Okay.
When the stars of the show start getting killed off in gruesome ways, two LAPD detectives must put their differences aside to solve the case.
Okay.
So it's a murder mystery with Muppets.
Right. I think it's not going to necessarily go full on
Meet the Feebles.
Well, no, probably not that either. But I'm saying I don't think they're going to. It would be awesome if they treated the genre like 100% straight. Like, it wasn't ironic. It just happened to have Muppets. But I think it's going to be a little. It's going to be a little ironic. It's going to be something. The vibe I'm getting from it is like Avenue Q meets Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
And I could see a fun version of that too. I'm just more okay. First of all,
I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm just saying that's what I'm getting from the information we have so far.
No, and I don't disagree with you. I'm not saying that. I'm excited just because it's a Muppet.
Mm-hmm.
That are actually coming on and doing a rated R version. I don't know why, but that just seems sort of.
Well, it's not the Muppets, right? Like, it's not like
no, Miss it's Piggy the Jim Henson
and,
Company
and Kermit and stuff. It's just going to be.
No, it's just the company that does the Muppets.
Right, so Jim Henson, so just kind of nameless puppet characters.
Yeah, it just says that Jim Henson company is doing with STX Entertainment.
Right.
Yeah, I guess that it was rumored a while ago and when Catherine Heigl was a thing.
Yeah.
She was rumored to be in it, but they've replaced him with Jamie Foxx.
Placed her, yes.
So, I don't know. To me, it sounds kind of fun. I like your idea of it being like a straight drama, just happens to have Muppets
in it. Yeah, if they played it like a real thriller, like if it was like 999 or something, but like half the characters were Muppets.
Well, it does say in the article that that this happens to be set in a world where Muppets and humans just like coexist. Like, it's not out of the ordinary.
Yeah,
so.
like Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yeah, exactly like Who Framed Roger Rabbit. So
or like the Muppet Show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think this is kind of a fun idea. And if it does end up really happening, then go for it. I mean, I liked Meet the Feebles, which I don't think it's going to go that far.
No.
but yeah, I mean, again, if this was like Happy Times, just a Muppet thing, I would be kind of into it. So I don't know. I just think it sounds like a cheeky, fun idea, and we don't usually get a whole lot.
Yeah, it seems like one of those kind of like idiosyncratic comedies, kind of like Keanu that we got this year, where it has a kind of a gimmick or a hook that's all sort of leaning on, and on this, you know, based on the strength of whatever screenplay we get, that gimmick or hook could pay off really well. This week in Dwayne Johnson. It's official. Dwayne Johnson is Doc Savage. And if you don't know who Doc Savage is, I think we actually might have announced this a long time ago that Shane Black was going to be doing a Doc Savage movie. Shane Black, who wrote and directed The Nice Guys, which we're going to be reviewing here in a little bit. But Doc Savage was like an old pulp character that basically like every adventurer character since, like Johnny Quest... and Indiana Jones and all of that kind of stuff was sort of based on.
They can trace their lineage back to him, sure.
Yeah, in some way or another. You know, that guy who runs around and discovers things and has muscles and a gun and whatever.
Punches dudes, but is super smart and is like the epitome of everything masculine and intelligence and beauty.
You're going to write a sonnet about Doc Savage right now?
He is a sonnet unto himself as a man, Cassidy. No one needs to do that for him.
You're probably right. Some could even argue that there's shades of Doc Savage that ended up in Batman, because I remember that the one of the key producers that worked really hard to get Batman on the screen from like the mid 70s up until 1989 when they made Batman finally, after years and years of development hell, he was also a writer on Doc Savage at the time of the comic book. And was a fan of both and wanted and had visions to see them both on screen. And I remember him. I saw him. The only reason I know all this stuff is because I saw a panel at Comic-Con a million years ago. But I remember him saying he was a little annoyed when Indiana Jones came out because they kind of beat him to the punch.
Well, I do know that a lot of Superman, there's a lot of things that Superman is based on about him. I mean, he's Doc Savage is the Man of Bronze as opposed to the Man of Steel. He has a solitary base up in the Arctic. This is all stuff that Dwayne Johnson himself reported on, though, about that character specifically.
Right.
So.
Right. But, you know, as far as Dwayne Johnson playing the part, sure, he's a big guy. He has muscles. He can deliver funny lines.
Mm-hmm.
I could definitely see him playing around in Shane Blackland very easily.
Well, especially if you think of that. I know you didn't like it, but for some reason I still did that one. Pain and Gain.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. He was good in that.
He was.
I mean, the movie itself I had issues with, but I thought that there were strong performances in it, including his.
Yeah. But I was just thinking maybe like a tone around that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I also, the other thing that I've read about this specific project is that one of the basis is yes, he's this perfect man when it comes to intelligence and it comes to strength. And he's, you know, trained to perfection in both like academics sort of ways and, you know, beating people up. But he is the most socially awkward, like weirdo in the world. And that's kind of what the premise is. So it's almost kind of vaguely Sherlock Holmes in a way, too.
Sure.
But if they really played that up, that he's super socially awkward, that would be super fun.
That would be funny. And again, something Shane Black could do, because a lot of his characters, we'll get into this, a lot of his characters have those kind of video sequences.
Right.
Neuroses. All right. Did you have one more story, right?
Yeah, the long gestating and long failed to be produced Don Quixote movie, The Man Who Killed Don Quixote, is at it. Terry Gilliam is trying to get at that again. But this time, Adam Driver will be playing the Sancho Panza character. And Michael Palin, on the other hand, will be playing some version of Don Quixote.
Right
now, the rumor is that will be not some time traveling strange adventure, but rather it will be a more set in present day. Maybe kind of like, I mean, to me, it almost kind of sounds, the Don Quixote story is very similar to the Fisher King.
Yeah.
So, and if they're going to be putting it in modern day and Michael Palin's character is going to be having these romantic fantasy kind of ideas and battling off, to me, it sounds very much like the Fisher King. So I'm half and half about this. He's one of my favorite directors. I love a lot of his early work, and I even like some of his latter work that a lot of people aren't as into. But with this one specifically, I'm just I guess I'm just cautious because everything in the kitchen sink has gotten in the way of this movie being made. So I'm just like, sure, it'll happen, right?
This is kind of his white whale of a movie. He's been trying to get this off the ground forever. And, you know, it's like the ultimate magic realist story. And Terry Gilliam's sort of the ultimate magic realist director. So it should have happened by now. And in fact, almost did happen. What was it? They even got like a third of the way into production on it at one point. There's a whole documentary about it, The Man Who Killed La Mancha, where basically everything and all things that could go wrong in a production, including like storms and floods that destroyed the set and all of this stuff, with a version of this movie that was supposed to star Johnny Depp back in like what, the early 2000s or something like that?
Oh, there's been versions with Johnny Depp and Ewan McGregor, Robert Duvall, Jack O'Connell. Yeah. There's been so many different versions of this that it's kind of mind boggling. And that specific documentary, The Man Who Killed La Mancha, it's quite humorous and kind of a if you like watching everything go wrong kind of like comedies, this is like one of those just in documentary form.
Right, right.
Yeah, the flash flood parts is just the cherry on top of all that. He's at it again. Apparently, there's going to be the Man Who Killed Don Quixote movie.
Yeah, and Adam Driver's cool, and Michael Palin's fine. So I think that the
Michael Palin's old enough now,
right? Yeah,
to play the character. So that's funny. And what's interesting too is that Michael Palin was in Terry Gilliam's first movie, The Jabberwocky. I'm not saying he's going to die. I don't know. I said that strangely, but just saying it was his first. Hopefully it's not his last, but you know.
Right. If he died in the middle of production, like after they've already had like, you know, a decent amount of stuff filmed.
Uh-huh.
Do you think he'd just throw his hands in the air and be like, okay, fuck it. Never mind. This Michael movie Palin? Just is never going to happen.
He said this is his last attempt. If it doesn't go through, he's not going
right?
to do it.
Like, it's either his last attempt or it's the first of the only movie he's going to even try and make from now to the end of his life.
maybe that's what he should do. I don't know. I mean,
you know what would be really funny, though,
yeah.
is if something like that happened, some Man of La Mancha or the Man Who Killed La Mancha style disaster buried this production again.
Right.
And then he throws his hands in and he's like, whatever, I'm just going to do a TV show or something. And then I'm just going to direct Game of Thrones from now on. And then, like, Brett Ratner gets it made in 4 weeks.
Don't say things like that, Cassidy.
Starring Paul Bettany and Nick Cage in the leads. All right, let's go ahead and get into the reviews. And even without Netflix homework, we still have two movies to get through. So I think we can do it. Let's start with The Nice Guys. So this is written and directed by Shane Black. Shane Black co-wrote it with Anthony Bagarozzi. I'm sure there's a much better Italian pronunciation of that last name. But this is a period comedy noir, very similar to other Shane Black things we've seen. Shane Black famously wrote the first Lethal Weapon, The Last Boy Scout, and Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, as well as the most recent Iron Man movie. And Iron Man aside, the thing that all of these movies have to do with each other is they're kind of comedy crime stories with unlikely pairings, buddy movie kind of thing going on, with a little bit of a mystery angle in the plot. And that's exactly what we have here. I think the thing that really sets this apart, as opposed to those other movies, is the 70s LA setting that he puts it in. And he really kind of embraces the kitsch and the look of the kind of 70s milieu that he's making it. And in some ways, it kind of informs the characters and the plot in some thematic distinctions. Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling play the unlikely duo that we have in this movie. Russell Crowe plays kind of a heavy for hire called Jackson Healy. And Ryan Gosling is kind of a hapless private eye named Holland March, who's a single parent trying to raise a 12-year-old daughter. And it just so happens that the guy that Russell Crowe's been hired to or the girl, I should say, that Russell Crowe's been hired to protect is the same girl that Ryan Gosling is on the search for. And because of that, after Russell Crowe has to punch Ryan Gosling in the face a lot, they realize that they could get a lot more work done, cover a lot more ground if they work together, because now they have to find her, and it takes them into the seedy underworld of porn and dirty politics and maybe the car industry. And it's one of those kind of plots like The Big Lebowski, and even more so like last year was the year before Inherent Vice.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those kind of comedy noir plots. It's sort of Chandler-esque, convoluted, a million red herrings kind of plots where the plot isn't the point. And you shouldn't spend too much time trying to connect the dots because the movie's going to do it for you anyway. All that really matters in these kind of movies is the last 15 minutes when all the right people confess to everything. And so you just have fun along the way. And I think as far as comedies like that go, that have this kind of structure, this one does a really good job at it. It's as far as Shane Black movies go, I think it's kind of middling. And I think we've seen him do this material stronger, specifically with Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and the first Lethal Weapon. But I still had a lot of fun in the theater, and I still appreciate Shane Black's witty dialogue. I like the density of these characters. And I have some reservations, but I want to get a few impressions from you. What did you think of The Nice Guys?
My big takeaway, I was almost in the exact same camp as you, but my big takeaway is I think Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling had really wonderful chemistry together.
Interesting.
I thought that they were pretty funny, but my biggest problem with it was, besides it being very, like, this was Shane Black, a blueprint to a movie, like to the key. To me, what it reminded me a lot of in pacing and plotting was The Last Boy Scout.
Sure.
Also, that one had a similar weird noir kind of thing, theme kind of running through it, as well as this did.
Yeah, as well as Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. Yeah.
As well as Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. I feel like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang does it the most honest.
Yeah.
And I think that movie has a better energy and in general is just a better movie. But this one is fun. If you enjoyed his other works, you'll enjoy this one. I felt like that the trailers ruined a lot of the comedy aspects to it.
Yeah.
Being an action comedy, it really hinged on me being interested in the jokes a lot. And because I knew every single joke.
The big ones. Yeah.
Especially the big ones that would have been really funny if I hadn't known. It kind of left me bored at times. So I go about 50-50 with this. I liked it, but I don't know if it really, it didn't get to me. Like I didn't go into Kiss Kiss Bang Bang with a lot of expectations. I knew it was Shane Black and I was like, oh, this might be fun. Watched it really like it was kick ass.
It was a big surprise for a lot of people. Yeah.
And this on the other hand, like it felt very like connect the dots kind of Shane Black.
Right, a little bit more of the same.
Yeah. And yeah. I again, it's not by any means like a throwaway film. It was fun. I just can't say that it necessarily knocked my socks off or blew me away. It just was kind of like, oh, that was fun. And then I was done with it.
I agree with you. There's something about that aspect of it that it's the best and worst thing about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because yes, it doesn't exceed my expectations. It doesn't shoot for the stars. It kind of shoots for the moon.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about it, about the genre, the style of the movie, the type of R rating that it is, that's kind of throwbacky.
Oh, completely, yeah.
And kind of feels like something we would have got pretty often in like the late 80s, early 90s, the Shane Black, you know, heyday.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
And I appreciate that a movie like that, with these actors in it, was able to get made for one, and was able to be pretty well budgeted, and could exist somewhere in the marketplace on a large scale. And so when I was sitting there in the theater, even though I was kind of like, yeah, this is a little lukewarm sometimes, I still enjoyed that I'm seeing this type of movie in a theater right now.
Yeah, and it feels like we're getting a little bit more of that lately, at least this year.
Yeah.
That kind of rated R, kind of throwback. But it feels like more that we're more hungry for this kind of thing because we haven't seen it for a while. But I can't necessarily say that it's like over the... But it is nice to not watch a movie and it be destroying the world or universes or whatever.
Right, just something that's kind of laid back. It almost kind of in some ways has a bit of a... I can't think of who's the guy, Jackie Brown and Get Shorty and all those movies.
I know who you're talking about.
The novelist who wrote that. It feels like one of those kind of stories in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Elmore Leonard. Thank you. And all of the, you know, the kind of the funk music in the background and all that stuff. It has that kind of vibe to it. Like it's sort of a fun caper. The stakes aren't that high, even though there's people being killed left and right.
And they joke about it.
They do. They kind of make fun of the high body count. One of the big standouts of this movie, Matt Bomer is as a funny and campy, but also sort of genuinely terrifying hitman.
Almost a Bond villain, yeah.
Yeah, but in a good way.
Agreed. I've always liked Matt Bomer, but I've never, I guess if we're talking specifically his performance, I don't think we've ever seen him quite as full bad guy. And that suit fits well on him.
It works. He's like total like Patrick Bateman in this movie.
He has a real those real blue eyes really sell him as being able to murder you for whatever reason.
Right. And he's eating it up. Like, he's totally having fun with this role. And you can see him having fun, but it doesn't come off as snarky or too knowing either. Like, he's just, and you just get just enough of him. I think if they had played that character too much, I've heard some reviews or whatever thought that they should have exploited that character more because he was so fun. Mm. But I think that you want him about like that. You know, he's like a Boba Fett. You don't want to overexpose it.
He's just a bad man, and that's what we need to know about.
Yeah, and it's a lot of fun. I think that, what's her name? I'm trying to find the actress who plays his daughter.
Hall. Oh,
Angourie
Rice. Okay.
Angourie Rice. Right. Yeah, I think she's really good in this movie. And she's a much bigger part. And that's the one thing that the trailers didn't give away, is how big of a part this girl was going to be.
Agreed.
It's almost a three-hander by the middle of the movie between them. And she's really the heart of it. And pretty explicitly, she's the moral center of the movie. It's interesting
much,
that you said...
Much, much like The Last Boy Scout.
Yes. Yeah. And it's interesting that you said Crow and Gosling had this great chemistry, because I actually feel like that's one of the biggest problems with the movie, is I think individually they're doing good performances, mm-hmm. but I don't know if they really work all that well as a duo, because both of them are very interior actors.
Sure.
And both of them are playing it pretty close in this movie. And so when even like, Gosling, who's doing a lot of tics and he's, fumbling with his lighter and that kind of stuff. And he's very physical in the movie. He's still playing it really quiet and very interior. And so is Russell Crowe. So when they do these scenes together and they're exchanging this witty repartee Shane Black dialogue, it never really feels like a straight man and a foil. It kind of feels like two straight men.
Yeah, I didn't see that at all. I just got the Odd Couple kind of feel out of it. And I was like, oh, okay. So
it worked for you.
Yeah, it worked for me. I do think that they had a good chemistry. And I think that that's kind of what made the humor work. Mm-hmm. I mean, also good timing, but all of Shane Black's movies are kind of like that. Just
yeah. Very snappy, very quick. Yeah. Yeah.
So I would say if you haven't seen it and you would enjoy it, if you like these, especially if you like Shane Black kind of movies, you check mm-hmm. it out. But again, I can't say if we're like really talking about it in comparison to anything or talking about it in general. I can't really say that it blew me away or necessarily was like,
no,
man, that was like what I really, really wanted. Because honestly, I guess I am one of those people that wanted like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang 2. And
you kind of got it, though. And I think almost in a way, that's maybe the problem, is it's too familiar.
Well, but again, I think it was more that I felt like I was getting like just a Shane Black movie, just like fill in this color a little different or fill that color in a little.
Sure.
And I could just think of a bunch of his other films. Whereas Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, where it felt familiar, it also felt very new. So I don't know. I feel half and half about this, and it is definitely a Shane Black film. So, I mean, you've got the kid running around and
it's L.A. And I think one of the biggest takeaways for me is the production design. I think, the transformation of L.A. to 70s L.A. is convincing. And I really got immersed in that world and sort of the horrible wallpapers and the shag carpets of it all. I really enjoyed sort of the look of the movie and the haircuts and all of that kind of stuff. There's one scene that takes place in like this sleazy Beverly Hills mansion porno thing.
Sure.
Like swinger party, whatever the hell was going on. And I enjoyed that whole set piece. I thought that was maybe the strongest like 15 minutes of the movie.
Well, I like that we always talk about the dirty 70s, but yeah. Even when you go back and you're talking about the little ladies and the other characters that they show. Mm-hmm. Like they're like, oh, you watch your mouth. You said dang or things like that. And I found that a little cute. In some films, it would feel kitschy, but it worked within the context of these characters and what was happening. So I thought that was fun, too. And also, it stands in weird juxtaposition to our lives right now. Some of the things that they were talking about and how we feel like things will affect kids and what will it do. And
Yeah, I there's some, the movie reaches a little bit for something more thematically, and it kind of, it makes these notions of what that generation, the type of political corruption that that is going to eventually set into a path. And it's in there, and, you know, bully for him that he tried to make the movie about something. I don't know if it's about something enough to really be about something.
It didn't. It didn't really. Those thematics didn't.
It didn't
really
quite come
out
together.
But they. But they were in. There were parts where it talked about that. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I'm not, it fulfilled that promise. Or because if it did, then I might have. I don't know. Right. Maybe that's another thing. Is that if it went all the way there, then I would have like commended it a little bit more. But I don't know if I wanted that because it was just kind of fun to watch a movie and not have like a bazillion stakes.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think that it plays just well enough as far as the plot goes. And I didn't necessarily need that stuff, but I did notice it. Actually, funnily enough, between this movie and Inherent Vice, I think Inherent Vice is probably better at the thematics.
Right.
But wasn't as entertaining to me as this movie was. I would probably, if I was, you know,
I like Inherent Vice more, honestly.
I think it's a better movie as far as just like, you know, you have one of the world's greatest directors making, you know, it's a much more artfully.
I thought Josh Brolin, I loved him so much in that film and I could have watched him eat pancakes all day.
I think it's a more artfully made movie. But I actually think I had a better time at The Nice Guys because it was low stakes and because it had quicker dialogue in it. And it's sort of enjoyed its genre stuff more.
Feeling a little bored here and there with different scenes and different parts of it.
It lulls.
I felt like, and I don't think in a good way, because I don't mind when a film has quiet moments, like when they're sitting poolside or something like that. I don't mind that. I felt like I had seen it so done other times in his body of work that it just felt very repetitive. I would have preferred something like, you know, if we're talking Inherent Vice, I would just go watch The Big Lebowski.
That's the mother of this genre.
It is the pinnacle. But what I'm saying is if we're talking,
it's almost unfair to compare because that movie is just, you know, it's a cultural landmark now.
True. But again, if you're going to go back to something, that's the one I would just go back to instead of this, because this one is so kind of throwaway. I feel weird because at the same time, I don't feel like the stakes need to be huge. And that kind of did turn me on. I don't know. I was kind of bored by it.
I know what you're saying. I say this is a good time at the matinee. That's what I say. I say pay $7.50, get out of the heat in the summer, enjoy your popcorn. You'll maybe return to this movie in 10 years when it's showing on HBO for some reason. And you'll watch it from the middle in, because it doesn't really matter at what point you enter the movie.
Right. Agreed.
Yeah. Let's move on to X-Men Apocalypse. This just came out this week, or last weekend, as it were. So why don't you go ahead and set that up? What happens in X-Men Apocalypse?
Well, our mutant buddies, the X-Men, and some of their bad guys are all thrown over the world after the events of the Days of Future Past, which I halfway didn't remember until I saw this film. I was like, oh yeah, that happened.
Right.
Oh yeah, they destroyed Washington, D.C. I forgot all about that. but basically this old dusty blue mutant wakes up from the tombs of history and comes out into a modernish world and discovers that all of the people have gained power over the mutants, and this Apocalypse character is going to change that, and he goes on collecting different high-powered mutants to aid in his cause and
to take over the world.
This to me, I'm going to be honest, it's a lot like Days of Future Past. It's pretty forgettable and kind of bland. I
thought you were into Days of Future Past. It's been a long time since we've talked about it, but I thought you were more positive than that.
I think when I first watched it, I was, and then after a week had passed, that's the dangers of film review,
right?
For me, at least, is that I feel like sometimes if I watch a film, I have to have like a couple of weeks to digest it, certain films, Days of Future Past, while I don't think that there's anything necessarily that wrong with it, this film is very similar to that, and that it's very bloated and it's kind of colorless. Now, I don't think that there's nothing offensive about it. And you know what? I enjoyed it while it was happening at me, but I'm not going to really, there was a lot of looking and soulfully into the distance kind of moments in here. And it kind of cued back to the original X films, X1 and 2, which I'm still big fans of. And I still think are the best
of the best
X-Men films still.
Yeah.
This one, it was flashier. There was more special effects. They played with the characters a little here and there, but overall it just kind of felt bloated. There was a lot of extra mutants, and I just don't feel like it. I don't feel like it paid off, especially now that we have so many superhero movies all the time, especially team movies. This one kind of just didn't. This feels like, I need something more like Deadpool again or something like that. This doesn't do anything for me.
Interesting. I have a sub question.
Okay.
This is a caveat to the whole
Am I surprising you? You feel like I'm
No, not necessarily. I think the movie is pretty aggressively mediocre, but some people have stated, and I thought that they were kind of a little quick to jump to this conclusion, but maybe it's true, that because Deadpool was so meta and was playing with the genre and within a world of characters that we're already kind of familiar with, within a comic company that is already pretty famous, is Deadpool to the superhero genre, and specifically these X-Men movies, what the first Scream was to the slasher genre? Can it ever be done again? Can we really take these movies seriously again after Deadpool send it up?
Yeah, I think so. I don't.
You don't think that's necessarily the problem?
I think there were a bunch of slasher films after. I mean, it wasn't necessarily as popular. But
no,
I don't
but they
think
were all
that,
kind
I don't
of playing
think it,
in that.
I think Deadpool was fun, but I don't think it was nearly as
game-changing
as Scream was, or necessarily commented as much as Scream did on that genre. I think Scream really did kind of pull it apart and look at the underbelly of what the slasher was. And I don't think Deadpool was as, I think it was entertaining and a good time at the movies, but
So the problem with it isn't that you couldn't take any of it seriously anymore because Deadpool just made fun of this world. The problem was the movie is a little boring.
And this is the thing is, for some reason this was just bled through. Usually it doesn't happen, but a lot of my friends had seen it before me, and I just heard about all the bad reviews to this film.
Oh, yeah. It was. I saw this movie on a Sunday. The movie had been out officially for maybe 4 or 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you count, like, the early opening days and stuff. I felt like I was going to walk into a war zone of a movie. I thought, like, I was actually surprised by how okay it was, because the bile that was flowing from my computer screen about this movie was insane.
I felt that way at first. At first I was like, wow, this isn't that bad. I actually thought that the first part of the film was pretty fun and kind of flowed pretty well. There's this halfway mark, and I'm not exactly sure where in the film, but there's a halfway mark where then by the end it just feels like glut and I'm not interested in it. I think it's kind of after the Quicksilver scene. As soon as that happens and they go into Weapon X and they do all of that, it feels a lot like them still trying to apologize for the X franchise. And I'd rather them just get over it and go on.
I agree.
I guess it was neat to see Wolverine in his little skivvy, weird metal dome hat thingy.
I feel like the Avengers movies had to shoe in Spider-Man. I felt like that was that in this movie, except for not even fun in its own way. It was just like, oh, okay, we're doing this again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I
just felt extra.
You just couldn't not do this.
Right.
And it actually felt so clunky and plucked in there that it might as well, it felt just as ridiculous as like some of the stuff from the Wolverine movies at that point.
I still think it's better than the first Wolverine movie, but But that's okay. We do both agree that it kind of takes, it does kind of take you away from what's going on. I think it kind of takes away from your villain. And you know what? I don't think Oscar Isaac does necessarily a bad job, but I don't think the character design is necessarily still that good.
I'm okay with it. Like, basically the X-Men movies, increasingly, they're making the costumes and everything a little bit more like the comic books.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think there's, now that Marvel's set a precedent that you can make these people look like the way they do in the comic books and you can make it play.
Right.
It doesn't have to look like pajamas.
Or a BDSM
leather thing.
Yeah, we don't need to like have them at a bar, you know.
Right.
Oh, come get me with your whips, Logan. Ooh.
I don't know what you're doing right now, but... But no, yeah, I know what you mean. Like, when the movies first came out, they were very almost shy a little bit about the comic bookiness of it. And actually, in a way, I think that really helped Bryan Singer sort of come up with an original take for the X-Men in a way, because he was so concerned with grounding it when the first movie came out, especially the first movie.
I think it was good for the public, too, because I don't think that they could see past, like, bing, bang, bam, bam. Like, I don't think that they could, which I think is a part of comic books.
It's not necessarily always a part I like. Right.
But it's not the only thing about comic books. And that was the problem back then. Yeah.
But now people have kind of figured out how to do bing, bang, bam, zip in a way that works for movies. And Bryan Singer is like catching up to that, I think. Mm-hmm. I think he was out of the game a little. And then he's like, oh, wow, this whole Marvel thing took off and they're like doing it. They're doing comic books. Okay, I'll try and do that now, too. And I feel like there's a little bit of a disconnect between the X-Men universe he helped set up, which I'm fine with. Actually, the X-Men universe from 1 and 2, I'm fine with that world. It's not like the comics. There's a lot of differences. They take a ton of liberties. But I was fine with that world. I think when...
It was consistent, at least.
It was consistent. The third one's a hot mess. Everyone knows that. When X-Men First Class came and kind of reset everything a little bit, I actually think that everything that's a problem with this movie, you can trace back to X-Men First Class.
I don't think so. I think it all comes back to the apologizing. I don't think we need to apologize. I think X-Men First Class... Or even the last movie, it reset it, just reset it, and then tell the stories you're going to tell.
Agreed. They didn't need to go back as much, and they didn't need to, but there's a lot of inconsistencies. Like, I've read some articles, it's like the 12 things that doesn't make sense or whatever. They talk about people's ages, and they talk about, like, why is this person not look a lot older? Why, at one point in the movie, they make fun of that. Like, Professor X meets, Moira MacTaggert again. He says, you have an age today, and everyone in the audience gets to have a chuckle because clearly, obviously, they're not really paying that much attention to.
It's been 10 years. So it's been a 30-year gap between the first and the third one.
Right. And she should look like a, 50-year-old woman. She doesn't at all.
I'm kind of okay with that just because of kind of where that's kind of how it happens in the comic books, really. I mean, you're getting them month after month, year through year, so it's a little different. But you kind of get this weird, like, how it was at the start versus how it is at the end. I actually don't have as much of a problem with that as much as I just kind of am like, just tell your story.
Well, here's
apologizing for the last ones.
I agree with that. Here's a few issues that I think were born from X-Men First Class. One of them being, I'm really, really sick of Mystique Everdeen. And, you know, when they first introduced that whole concept in X-Men First Class of her and Charles being best friends as kids, which was weird and incongruent with the universe they'd already set up, but I was willing to kind of go with it. Mm-hmm. And then I felt like they kind of fixed that in X-Men Days of Future Past, and I could see her becoming the Mystique we know she's supposed to become. And then they undo that completely, and they're like, she's the biggest star we have in these movies. She needs a lot of screen time. We're going to make her Katniss.
Right.
And that's totally what she is. She's Katniss Everdeen in this movie, and she's leading the X-Men, and now it totally doesn't make sense.
Well, she I've got to say, yeah, I haven't been a big fan of her in these films.
No, I never have. And I thought she was kind of okay. I felt like they were doing something interesting with her in Days of Future Past.
Right.
But now it's totally erased.
Well, also the other thing, too, is they always give her the worst lines.
Mm-hmm. Like there's a lot of bad lines in this movie.
Yeah. And
But there's some rough ass dialogue.
But always at the end, they give poor Jennifer Lawrence one of these horrible, horrible lines, and it logs off the film. And I'm like, please shoot me. Every time she says one of those lines at the end of one of these films, and I'm like, why do they keep doing that?
Mm-hmm.
Stop doing that.
But, yeah, I would say the dialogue almost all around is universally awful. Through most of the movie. Now, there's some actors that I think are able to overcome it. I think Fassbender and McAvoy are so good that you don't notice when they're rolling off this terrible dialogue. Maybe they were able to adjust it a little bit.
Sure.
But I think the biggest problem with the movie is it's just paced awfully. Like, it's like 2/3 in the movie when anything really starts to happen. The first two-thirds of the movie is all build up.
I thought the first half was, I was having fun with the first half. And I was like, okay, let's see where this goes. And then by the last half, that's when I'm like, this is all over the place. And it's just
people shooting stuff and blowing stuff up.
And cutting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
For a long period of the movie, nothing's happening. And then when it does happen, it's not that interesting anyway. And it sounds like I'm like shitting on this movie because, but actually it's not my least favorite, even by, like, I think there's 3 X-Men movies that are easily worse than this.
If we're talking like standalone films and stuff, sure.
Yeah.
I still think of the new ones. I think First Class, just because it was fun and telling its own fucking story. If we're talking about this new trilogy, that's the one I'm the most okay with, this new one. The last one was so forgettable, and I can literally, everything I know about that film is from the things that you had to remember for this film. And I had to be like, oh yeah, that happened. Oh yeah, that happened. But other than that, it's pretty like the last X-Men film was just a big like, okay, we reset everything. It can be whatever it wants now. But then they still don't do that. So
I like Days of Future Past for what it was. I agree that it was bloated, and I felt like it had so many objectives to get out of the way to just be its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it the whole point of the movie was resetting everything. And so there was a lot of putting the pawns in the right places and tipping the dominoes and all of that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
For that movie to even work as a story. And that's a problem for that movie. But I think the story stuff we do get is pretty good. This movie, less so. But there was stuff I enjoyed. I enjoyed all the stuff with Quicksilver again. He's still good.
Oh, and yeah.
That effect that they figured out with his speed powers is still fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
I think as far as an X-Men movie, this might be one of the best ones as far as getting it a true ensemble where every single character, every single main character, the villains are sort of sidelined, but all of your heroes actually get a lot of screen time individually. And I kind of have a good feeling what each one of them is about. And that isn't always the case with X-Men movies.
Yeah.
And I think this one does a pretty good job at spreading the character stuff.
If you're not counting the villains, then you're right.
No, the villains are a problem.
They're just kind of left to the side.
They're just kind of there, other than Magneto, who always kind of gets to do stuff. And Apocalypse, which
I would say even his story was a little cut short. Like, I mean, I got it, but I don't know. Like,
are you talking about Magneto's?
Yeah.
Okay, here's a question. How many origin stories does Magneto need?
Apparently 3.
You would think, like, you know, almost being killed in the Holocaust would be enough for him not to trust humans. Apparently not.
Well, I guess they're trying to make it. Well, that's another thing that they're trying to do is they're like, well, in the other movies, he's not quite as powerful as he is in the comics. We want to make him as powerful as he is in the comics in this one. And so we get another version of Magneto. It was right. It was fun to see all these characters' powers. I like a lot of their powers. I was really happy to see Nightcrawler again.
Yeah, he was fun.
But again, like some of these characters that I was like, man, I'd like to watch more of him. This is like a small and like, I think kind of shitty nitpicky,
go for it
beat, but I don't like how I liked Beast, how he looked in the other films. I don't like how he looked in this one.
Beast.
Yeah.
Well, in this, both
he
him and Jennifer,
a haircut,
right. Both him and Jennifer Lawrence are almost out of costume the entire movie. And by out of costume, I'm not talking about the little like flight suits that they wear at the end. Mm. I mean, out of makeup, because they do not want to pay whatever exorbitant price they're paying for Jennifer Lawrence to have her run around unrecognizable. And that totally comes. It reminds me of like the early Spider-Man movies, the Sam Raimi ones, where Sam Raimi would come up with as many excuses as possible to keep the mask off.
And how all of New York knows who Spider-Man is, really.
Yeah, because of that. Yeah. Or like the same reason why now Hugh Jackman will never wear a real Wolverine mask.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, again, kind of whatever. Also, like with Beast, you can kind of understand it because he's like the most neurotic about being a mutant. And that's a big part of his character is he's always trying to come up with cures and how to not look like a mutant and blah, blah, blah.
That one, no, I just mean how he, like, the physical aesthetics of what his character looked like in Beast form. I liked how he looked in the other ones more. Again, it kind of
goes, I guess I didn't theme. Notice. I didn't really have a problem so much with the look of any character. Like I said, they're getting slowly and surely becoming more and more comic booky in their appearance. And
again, I fully avow how dumb that little critique is, but it was there. I'm not going to lie. I was like, nope, I like the Beast in the other movies. Look cooler.
No, fair enough. Yeah, I don't know. I don't hate this movie. Like I think some people, I feel like there's a thing going on right now. This is another caveat. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's a thing going on right now where the general critical body is almost excited for when one of these superhero movies fails.
Oh yeah.
Because they're over it and they're sick of seeing 12 of these movies a year, which fair enough. And so when one of them doesn't do very well, also we're coming off still pretty fresh off of Batman v Superman. I think that they really want to build support this narrative that we've jumped the shark on superhero movies. And then of course we'll get another great one and they'll have to concede it's great and, you know, move on. But I think that's a little bit of what's going on right now. Is I think they're inflating the awfulness of how this movie is.
Sure. I thought it was, this is one of those movies popular hate on the internet. There's just these things that the internet gleans onto and is like, yes, we hate this. We've all agreed. We've all agreed on it. Everybody say you hate it. And
I don't think this is just an internet thing, though. I think,
you can comment more on that. I'm saying from my personal perspective, that's kind of what it feels like. But
yeah, it's pretty. I mean, I think the fact that we're not only just shitting on this movie might surprise some people.
Well, I don't think it's completely. Again, I didn't mind the first half of this film. It's when, again, it's that middle half when they have to go and do the Wolverine stuff that I literally am like, okay, the pacing goes away. It becomes a big, everything's exploding at my face thing. You cut that and take that out of the movie. You have a good 20 minutes to do whatever the hell you want with. You know, we can explore some more of the villains. We can get more of a handle. Also, I will say, I mean, I know you didn't have a problem, but as I didn't have a problem at first, how Apocalypse looked, but as the movie went on, he started looking more and more cheap. He looked more and more like a Power Rangers character.
Well, I'll say this about the effects in general, including some of the Apocalypse effects. This movie was, did you see it in 3D or 2D?
I saw it in 2D.
So did I. And this happens every once in a while, and increasingly so. When you'll see a movie that was made for 3D, and there's those 3D moments that don't play in 2D at all.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of that in this, including the big rescue scene with Quicksilver, which actually looked okay. But there's a lot of times when there's a lot of characters that are shoved right up in the foreground, like almost close up. Mm-hmm. And or maybe shoulder up. And then there's a bunch of stuff happening in the background. And you know that if you're watching it in 3D, there's supposed to be all this depth stuff happening. Mm-hmm. But when you're watching it in 2D, it looks like cardboard cutout characters in the front and a green screen doing stuff in the back. And it looks cheap. And the opening sequence of the film with the prologue in Egypt with Apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised just how, like, I mean, this is a big blockbuster movie that costs millions of dollars. I was surprised how cheap and TV movie and like Scorpion King it looked. There wasn't enough extras. Like it looked small and like the sets looked brand new and freshly painted. It was a little off-putting almost from the start. And then I felt like it kind of got okay for a while and then it kind of fell apart again.
I'll be honest, it didn't bother me too much. I will say, I think if we get another one of these films with Magneto, there'll be another origin story because he rebuilt the mansion yet again.
Magneto gets a dog and then it's kidnapped.
Yeah.
And then it just becomes John Wick with Magneto. Actually, I'd watch that movie.
Why don't they just let him have a Magneto film already? Like,
well, they've tried to do it, like, almost, you know, like, so many times. They're really interested in Magneto. They have a great actor who's playing him right now. But, right?
It's just, I don't understand Fox's decisions with it sometimes either. Like, it's not that I'm just like, I mean, it would be great if they gave it back to Marvel, but that's not necessarily what I'm championing. It's just literally, I'm like, I'm not saying that I'm the best person to take it and make it better or whatever. I'm just saying, I know the characters well enough and I'm like, what are you doing with them? Can't you get just one comic book guy that's like, that's weird. What are you doing?
Well, it's like, what do you define as weird anymore with this universe? Because it's so off the rails as far as like the comic books.
That's kind of true, too.
Like they've gone their own way for so long that they're kind of making things up as they go now. And not even kind of, very much so. And then on top of it, you have Simon Kinberg ahead of these screenplays. And he's a hack writer. He's a traditionally very bad writer. He's only written one halfway decent movie, and that was X-Men Days of Future Past.
Well, maybe now that we're talking about it, I guess what I'm thinking is like, they, what we've been saying is it needs to go one way or the other. They either need to go towards the comic books and decide to do that, not just kind of half-ass it, or they need to make it their own story and do that. Like, not this in-between apologist, whatever, weirdo, baloney stuff, because I'm...
Right.
That's probably the stuff I am the most annoyed about, honestly, truly. It's just because I'm just like, tell your story. Just tell your story. But that's just me.
Yeah, I don't know. It's there. It's whatever.
It's problematic. But again, I the first half of the film, including some of the stuff you're talking about, didn't bother me. When the hiccup happened, I was like, oh, maybe this is going to be one of those weird cases where I disagree with what, you know, the general body's saying about the film. But it didn't happen. I got about halfway through and I was like, oh, I'm bored. I hate you. X-Men, I hate you. You did it again.
I didn't hate the movie, but I didn't love it, or even, then maybe probably didn't even really appreciate it all that much. I will say, though, and I know I'm in the
minority a little, but
I know I'm in the minority in this, but to me, I felt pretty similarly about X-Men First Class. To me, this is just a little worse.
See, I felt like this about Days of Future Past, just a little bit worse.
So there you go.
So it's pretty similar, just a little bit different angle, but yeah.
I think it's only marginally worse than the last few movies. I don't think we're at, if you've, like, here's a thing, here's an experiment. If you want to enjoy this movie, like if you've never seen it before and you really want to enjoy this movie, rent X3 and... Wolverine, the first Wolverine movie, X-Men Origins Wolverine. Watch those two. Really experience how bad this shit can get. Then go pay and see X-Men Apocalypse, and it's gonna seem like Citizen Kane.
I don't know. I'm almost an apologist for the third one. I don't think it's a good movie by any means, but I also think it was one of those movies that jumped the shark. It was mediocre, but I think that they're about in the same.
X-Men Apocalypse and X3.
Yeah, they're pretty similar in bad quality. And I've never been one to really shit on X3, honestly. I think it was a little bit of a misfire and it wasn't done as well as the other two. But at the same time, I was like, it wasn't necessarily this abomination that everybody makes it out to be. This film, I kind of feel the same way, but I'm still like, am I saying it's a good film? No, I'm just saying that it's just kind of a misfire. It's not that good, but it's not very offensively bad either. X-Men Origins, on the other hand, we're still talking I still think it's one of the worst comic book movies to happen ever. I would watch like the early 90s, like Captain America movies.
All right. And that's going to be our show. So, like I said, we're not doing a Netflix homework today because the dog ate my homework.
Put him in the stocks in the town square. Throw fruit at him.
Shame me with the bell and the whole Game of Thrones thing.
We're going to make him eat weird food and get wet simultaneously.
But if anybody has anything to say about anything we talked about today, and I know you've probably seen X-Men Apocalypse at the very least, and you have an opinion about it, you can share that with us at our email at jabberinthedrone@gmail.com, and we will read it on air. You can also contact us and find us on Facebook at facebook.com/jabberpodcast, where we post all of our news stories, as well as some other things. I think I posted that Devin Faraci article that a fandom is broke. It's kind of gone viral. I halfway thought about bringing that up as a pet topic, but I knew we had a lot on our slate tonight. But we might talk about it next week. So if you have something to say about it, go ahead and email us about that too. We're also on iTunes and Stitcher Radio, Player.fm, Zune, Pocket Cast, and the Windows Podcast Network. If you want to find us and stream us on your favorite podcatcher. You can read my movie reviews that I do weekly at the Idaho State Journal at saladforkreviews.blogspot.com. You can see some of the other stuff and reviews I've written for the Seattle-based entertainment site, mcguff.in/author/Cassidy. Check out Brad's entertainment movie comic book webzine that he does over at panelandframe.com. Check out Leland over at his comedy podcast that he does from his parents' basement. But actually, he just announced that he's moving to New Hampshire to go to college. So it'll soon, I don't know, maybe he won't be doing it anymore. We'll keep you updated on that. Dampercast.com. Rod and Denise, go listen to their Music Request podcast, their Southern California Music Request podcast at the Listening Party. And be sure to check out friend of the show, Patrick, at both of his great podcasts, Make Dad Read Comics and Almost Educational. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Bye.
Bye.